Those models keep just disappearing into random pieces of my house.
Which ones?
Those.
Yeah.
The things.
So wait, we're recording
the subscription.
The mini crate?
Mini crate, yeah. The mini crate models. Wait, they keep showing up and I keep just like shoving them in random places.
Just the box itself? Do you take them out of the box?
No. I look at them and then I put them back in the box. What I do, can I see one of the mini crates real quick? I'm not going to do anything dumb. I'm not geezy. I don't randomly destroy property. Yeah. It's funny. You still have the insert in here? Yeah, so what I found is the insert actually works better upside down.
What do you mean?
Well, so I've sometimes like this rides up a little, and then this can get underneath it and kind of flap around.
Yeah.
But with the insert upside down, it snugly holds that in place.
Yeah.
Like, they really should just put the insert in upside down, because then there's a lot less likelihood of it popping out of position.
Yeah.
So every one of them, I open it, I look at it, and then I put it back together like that.
Makes it harder. Well, I guess not. As I did it, and it was super easy.
Okay.
But I figure it would make it harder to get the slides to go on the sides to go straight down.
I think
down.
We have something unique in the chat that somebody actually is requesting Nate to be turned up.
I'm not as loud as normal. Ooh.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
I don't know what's going on either. I'm looking. Oh yeah, I'm kind of small over there.
All right, so
title of my sex tape.
Actually, I need to check.
And there seems to be feedback.
Yes.
So much input from Arctic Circle, who I got yelled at for calling by his real name last week.
Oh, hey, I know why they're not loud.
Why is that?
Our audio is just fine.
It's the Twitch computer isn't plugged in.
And there we go. Now we should be sounding a little bit better now on Twitch.
Is that working better?
He'll let us know in a minute.
It'll be fine.
All right.
No, I didn't have any. Let me go back to my recording devices. And yeah. I was up here beforehand and I thought I got everything set up and I did not get everything set up.
Just so missed one plug. Bad. You got almost everything. Yeah. So do you guys want a hibiscus and ginger mead, which is a true mead, pure honey wine? And then I have a pomegranate. Piment. I've never understood whether the Y is long or soft. What a piment is it's a hybrid mead and standard wine. So it's honey and grape juice versus just the grape juice of wine or just the honey of mead.
I'll try the piment.
Okay. Piment it is.
Okay. Also, shouldn't
we should go through introductions.
We should go through introductions. Good afternoon from beautiful Madison, Wisconsin, USA. Here from the Crippled System Studios. This is Crippled System.
Episode.
Something.
Mumble.
Come on. You know it.
Oh, 324?
That's
so close.
Yeah. Some of those numbers are
some
accurate.
Some of those. Yeah. There's the one number is accurate. Let's you choose. It's your third correct.
Okay.
The second one was correct, except it was in the wrong spot.
No.
The two is a correct number. It's just in the wrong spot.
We're playing Mastermind with the episode number.
It is
now.
Correct. It is in the wrong spot.
So we had one wrong, one correct but in the wrong spot, and one completely correct.
332,
and also one in the correct spot.
Well, that was what I meant by completely correct.
So that
is completely correct.
So that's one yellow and one black dot.
Yeah, one is correct.
Not
completely,
too much of that.
Including position.
You know
one.
I don't know about it.
It's pomegranate.
Oh, the pomegranate. Yes, the pomegranate. I thought it was the other stuff.
No, the ginger one, yeah, because ginger can be a harsh flavor sometimes.
Yeah.
332?
No.
214?
One is in the correct spot, in the exact correct spot.
We assumed that was the four.
The four is not. No.
So the two was in the correct spot.
Two was in the exact correct spot.
So it's 220 mumble. 223.
No.
221.
We need a whiteboard.
227.
No.
220.
No.
221.
I already did that one.
223.
No.
220B.
All right.
Which would be 230.
Two of the numbers are in the correct spot. The last number is not correct.
Okay.
Wait, so now the three is back to being correct?
No.
I'm not sure if we're drinking too much or not enough.
Us not enough, Andy too much is what it's sounding like right now.
No. 222.
Yeah.
222. Okay.
Yeah.
Good afternoon from beautiful Madison, Wisconsin, USA.
So none of the numbers were correct, but in the wrong spot.
When he said 324, it was the correct number, and one was in the exact correct spot.
Right, but you made it sound like those were two different numbers. One was correct, and one was correct, except for that it was in the wrong spot. See, that's where we went with the mastermind thing. And in reality, there was no correct but the wrong spot. There was only correct. Yeah, none of them were in the wrong spot, you lying sack of crap.
324?
Yeah, which one is correct but in the wrong spot?
Yeah.
The three or the four?
Those are not correct.
So this is so at mastermind. At mastermind, this is the point where we win automatically because the judge made a mistake. Yes,
you cheated.
Oh, that's mastermind. Very whiny.
All right. Good afternoon.
Because it has more of the grape juice, so it's less mead and more wine with that piment.
Good afternoon from beautiful Madison, Wisconsin, USA, from the Crippled System Studios. This is Crippled System 222.
Now I should have a hard cut right to that. So then we're not fucking everything up.
Right. We wouldn't want to start fucking things up now after our 221 episode streak of perfection. There was a request on our Facebook announcement about this episode that I talk about Gwent some more. So,
notice there was only one request.
There were zero other requests. The only request we had was for more Gwent.
Nobody else
talk.
Wants us to talk.
It's 100% of the requests posted were for additional Gwent discussion.
If you and David want to talk about it, I will go back and check
Have
out the
Have you played much anymore?
No.
You got to finish all the...
I'm liking other games more than I am liking Gwent. The hard part for me, and I know that it's part of the game, is figuring out when to stop round one.
Correct. Yeah, that's the hardest part of the game.
Because I want to win round one.
Yep.
And fuck the computer in that.
Yesterday was the semifinals, and today, yesterday was the quarterfinals, and today was the semi and the finals of Gwent Challenger 2. And one of the guys who won in the quarterfinals, he just blew people's minds because he, a game started and he had first go in the first round and he just passed. And he ended up winning that game because it was the right move to do. And that just boggled my mind because I always fight so hard for the first round.
Yeah. I always get to, by the end of the first round, as I have less cards, and I'm like, no, this is going to fucking suck.
Yep. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's the hardest part of the game.
Yep.
Yeah. So, it can be frustrating. It's like Go. Any well-balanced game, you just have to lose a bunch until eventually you figure out why you're losing, and then you stop doing that. I mean, War Machine's the same way when you start, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but,
it's fair enough.
Yeah. I'd rather get chased by Jason right now.
So that's fine.
And that's fine. Been more fun. God, I got to watch somebody get hit by a car again. It's the best when there's a betrayal.
I broke down and crafted a muzzle, threw it in my deck. That card's cancer, but just like Iris, eventually I had to use it.
Remember when there was a PG in Madison that decided that he was going to ban Iris to all events?
No, I remember when there was a random shithead with no authority whatsoever who decided that.
Oh, yeah, he wasn't even a PG.
He was nothing.
I'm going to play Signar, and then I'm going to make it so you can't charge over these hills.
I'm going to declare every hill to be a linear or to be an obstacle, so you have to spend an inch to climb up it, and it's mark one, so you can't charge up it. Oh, look, I win all the time because I'm shooting you from on top of these.
With my long gunners, they have double tap. What? Boop, 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 boop.
What is Dave doing these days?
I don't know who Dave is.
Yeah.
Dave's not here.
Who's this Dave?
Dave's not
person?
Here, man.
What am I doing these days? Oh, I think this is a gentle request because we're supposed to say what we're playing. I am playing Kador right now.
Oh.
And I am enjoying Kador.
I'm still playing Mulligan Scoia'tael.
I'm playing...
Oh, I might make Nilfgaard when the new decks come out. There is a card that you would love. It's even more Avalok the Sage than Avalok the Sage is.
I've been playing. I've been losing very fat quickly with my Kador, and I play blacksmiths, which I'm happy to know that according to the new open play or the organized play book for Steamforged, I don't have to have them painted in official tournaments. So they made
their War Machine, not GW rules as far as tournaments are.
Kind of.
I just meant as far as painting requirements. Like,
no,
you,
no,
you don't have to. Or?
Nope. They actually changed it entirely. They made the original ruling was basically you have to have everything painted for tournaments, which makes sense. I mean, I understand, and it's only painting 6 models, maybe 10 models tops, because that's the list that you would have to bring to an event.
Or 11 if you have that guy with the little dwarfy person in his pocket.
Avarice and Greed.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could possibly have 11. Or, I mean, if you're playing the morticians,
spiders, ladies, and
well, there's a guy that's got puppets, little puppet guy.
Yeah, you might have to paint like 15 dudes.
Yeah, you might have to paint that many. Except for some odd reason, I don't know why, other than just trying to get people into the game. Steamforge made the ruling saying that you still have to, if you have metal miniatures, still have to have them painted. But if you buy the new blacksmiths or farmers,
the plastic stuff,
you don't have to have it painted for official tournaments.
What?
Exactly.
What a weird thing to decide.
Yeah, I'm okay with it not being painted. I mean, that's
like just pick a rule and stick with it.
Exactly.
People accuse companies like this of coming up with rules just to say buy new shit all the time, and this is probably the weirdest one. That does this not say buy new shit?
It's catering to new players who don't assemble. Somebody who want to have people to be able to just bring stuff out of the box and come and sit down and play. But at the same time, it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, if you're going to go with that ruling, then make it so if you have metal miniatures, that you don't need to bring them painted either.
Yeah, that's really weird.
Because even then, like a new player who picks up one of the other factions that's still metal still is barrier to entry.
Yep.
The only people who get the advantage are new players picking those two factions.
Correct. Or the kickoff box, which has two teams in there.
Which maybe that's their assumption.
So, I mean, what happens? So there's the Brewers and Masons that come in the kickoff box. They're full six-man teams, but there are six more models for each one of those teams.
Yeah.
What happens if they get those models? Do they have to bring in their unpainted plastic minis and then have to have their painted metal minis off those teams? Because they're not available in PVC in the for the Brewers or Masons, other than those two starting teams.
So two things. One, hi, Aggie. And two, somebody in the chat says they thought it was just for the tournament because they were released at that event.
Nope.
That's just a flat-out universal rule.
I can look it up again. Crazy. They say it basically the same way.
Bye, Aggie.
The same way that we would expect for like War Machine, or even, I think even 40K and GW has lifted their painting rules too.
Well, does GW even have rules for official tournaments now? Because, I mean, the last time I was aware of it, they shut down their tournaments and only had unofficial ones.
Not sure. But I know for, like, Privateer, and I don't know the rules for Malifaux because we don't have anybody in the area that plays Malifaux that
we associate should talk shit about us. It again so that there's big drama on the YouTube. Yeah. That was fun.
No, we don't need to do that.
That was good stuff.
I don't like talking shit about other companies.
No, I just like drama.
Okay. But,
we're going to take the official stance here that everyone that plays the game is wrong because it should be pronounced Malifaux.
Malifaux.
Malifaux. Even better.
No Malifaux were given today.
Yes.
But, I mean, the way it's written is to, it seems like they want to have that barrier of entry taken away. They want to have people be able to just come in, start playing the game, but then they still have the...
Yeah, but then why do you have that barrier for existing
for the metal minis?
That's,
it's weird.
Yeah.
Hey, you think you just make it universal. That's confusing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we can talk. Yeah, Arctic Circle says if Nathan wants drama, we can talk politics. But no. I don't know. I don't know because I have noticed this thing in my life that that if somebody respects you and thinks you're intelligent, they tend to just assume if you don't talk about politics that you have exactly the same political beliefs as they do. So I mean, I figure we can talk politics fine because everybody just assumes that we have the opposite political beliefs to them.
See, I just assume that if you're intelligent, you're a liberal. I see a lot of political cartoons because I read way too many political
shitstorm
cartoons.
Shitstorm in 5, 4.
No, this
three.
Isn't that shitstormy. I read a lot of political cartoons. I'm subscribed to a thread on forums that all they do is post political cartoons, and even from all over the world, like Australian ones and British ones and Eastern European ones that I don't even understand the language and they have to translate them and everything. But one cool kind of universal thing is a lot of times you'll see the right-wing political cartoonists put up cartoons about higher education brainwashing children and making them liberal. And they always phrase it as brainwashing. And I'm like, couldn't it just be that better educated people understand things more? But no, that couldn't possibly be it. It has to be the evil liberal professors brainwashing children.
So it says here specifically, modeling and painting in the section for the organized play document. Miniatures must be fully assembled in appropriate size base for order the model is designed, which makes sense.
Yep.
Metal models must be completely painted and based. This means that every metal model, including its base, must be painted with the acceptable variety of color and shading. So they're saying that three colors in a sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Plastic models may be used unpainted and unbased straight out of the box. However, we encourage players to field a fully painted team. Unpainted
and unbased?
So, they don't... Base is basically adding block or something like that to it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they need to be on the circle.
They need to be on the circle.
Okay. It's like,
No, maybe use unpainted and unbased. So you could just take it off the circle. But it does say, though, they must be assembled on the appropriate base. Yeah. But, it's
not Starship Troopers style where you just measure from the models.
But they definitely caused a big ruckus over in the Guild Ball supporters Facebook group. There's a lot of people who come from that old, I would call it old ideology of GW's everything. It's a hobby, so therefore everything must be painted, and I will only play against painted models. And if you don't have painted models, in fact, this is actually quoted from somebody, you're ruining my game.
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. You get that part all the time.
Yeah, and honestly,
I shouldn't have to play against unpainted models. Well, I shouldn't have to play against an elitist pile of shit.
Exactly.
So we're both not happy right now, are we?
Yeah, well, I mean, if that person refuses to play against you because your models aren't painted, you have been saved from having to play that game. Yeah. So I figure it's a win-win situation.
Absolutely. I mean, there's folks that we know personally that actually can't paint.
I will always support preferring painted models. Mm-hmm. I will always support personally choosing to only play painted models. Yep. I will always support encouraging people to attempt to paint their models.
Yep.
But I will never support elitism.
To say that you must paint your models in order to play a game with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, then I just would rather not play it with you at all.
Yeah, I like to play fully painted armies because the last time I played a game with a model that had no paint on it, my father was rushed to the emergency room.
So yeah. Obvious connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clearly this was causal.
Yeah. Sure. Sure. Well, by everything, yeah. But I mean, like for the blacksmiths, though. So if I'm playing a game with the blacksmiths, I'm playing against somebody else with the blacksmiths. We have the exact same models, the exact same sculpt, the exact same color. It's going to be difficult to tell things apart, especially if there's a streamed game going on.
Yeah,
you're going to see models that because there's 360 line of sight, so it doesn't matter how they're facing either.
So I'll play all of mine facing my whatever direction yours are facing, and I'll just run them up next to yours.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's and they all have the same tokens too, because if you got them out of the box, they all have the same paper tokens.
Oh, and Nick says on the chat that he prefers the passive-aggressive solution to that. So first tiebreak is fully painted. And honestly, I love that idea because I am of this view that, which seems to be a minority view, that all tiebreaks are bullshit. So so going to fully painted for the first one is fine with me.
I like
having a raffle for fully painted.
Yes, raffles for fully painted. I mean, generally, for Steamforge itself, the kit for Guild Ball event has got a ton of stuff in there for painted. So they got a fully best painted, best goal, and stuff like that. It's
thank you.
One of the reasons why we stopped going to Warhammer events was because of soft scores, and that's kind of one of those things that adds into that soft scores. Just because you're a good painter. Or you paid an exorbitant amount of money to get your army painted means that you're a better general than I am.
Well, and people have talked about so there's the tiebreak, and then there's stuff like giving a plus one or even downgrading it to a plus 0.5 to your die roll at the beginning of the game if you're painted. And it's like, no, you don't give in-game advantages.
No.
Like, there's the game and there's the hobby, and you should try to enjoy both if you can, but you should be allowed to focus on one.
Yeah,
I don't go into your house with a hammer and smash models that you painted if you don't play with them. and you shouldn't fuck with my gameplay if I don't paint them.
Exactly. Like I said, there's some folks that we know, like Black, mm-hmm. who physically can't see.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
He has to have oversized cards in order for him to actually play the game because his vision is shit. Yeah.
Or Daughter Frankenstein has a magnifying glass. Well, Black has really Black bad has got eyesight, too.
Okay,
but yeah. Daughter Frankenstein literally has like the jeweler, like the thing they put in their eye in the movies when they look at the gems. He has one of those on a chain around, or I'm sorry, one of those around the chain on her neck. That because that's how she has to look at cards. Yeah. You can't read them otherwise.
Yeah,
that's maybe someone's got Parkinson's. I can't fucking paint with Parkinson's.
Maybe somebody who has something like that, maybe they take pride and they want to have a really nice looking army, but they can't physically make a nice army because of.
And then people are like, well, you can pay to get them painted. It's a luxury hobby anyway. Well, maybe they're barely affording the luxury of owning the models. You shouldn't heap more luxury on top of it.
Yeah. And it's not that Guild Ball is really that insanely expensive to get into.
More Gwent talk. G-Dad said,
did I miss the Gwent talk? The answer is yes. We already talked about Gwent. We're not. Oh, God. They Gwent over it already. Yeah, we're done with Gwent.
Yeah, the caption the caption for the Twitch feed says Gwent talk. So I am obligated. Yeah, it's down there in the corner. Change it says Gwent caption. Talk. You can see it on your screen, Andy. It says Gwent talk there.
Change it.
So, Usurper, they spoiled today as one of the new models.
Damn
it's a Nilfgaard leader where you play him. He's a one-value spy, so you play him on the opponent's side of the board, and he creates, which is their term for the discover mechanic from Hearthstone, he creates any other leader in the entire game, which executes its ability, and it's boosted by 2. Which is fucking insane. Like, can you think what happens when you get, like, some of those Skellige or Skoyatal or Northern Realms leaders in Nilfgaard? And then if you're playing with Kaehir, you can trigger it twice. So you can get 2 fucking leaders in the game. That's insane. I'm totally going to start playing Nilfgaard just for Usurper.
Okay, now that we're done with Gwent talk.
And I've always wanted to play Nilfgaard Reveal. I'm almost done. I've always wanted to play Nilfgaard Reveal because the leader that plays in the Reveal deck is Voorhees, who I love in Witcher 3. I had a bromance with him. We went on dates together. He's my favorite. Morvan Voorhees. But
Voorhees, not Voorhees.
No, he's Voorhees.
Voorhees?
It's spelled differently, though. It's like Vorhis or something. But he's cool. But Reveal, you show cards. But the issue is once they're shown, they're shown. And a lot of cards like trigger stuff when you reveal them. A bunch of the new Nilfgaard cards have an ability called Conceal, which is to unreveal them. So then you could reveal them again to trigger the reveal abilities. It looks really interesting. True story.
So anyway, I went to a Steamroller yesterday.
Yes.
We should talk about upcoming events real quick here.
Okay, upcoming events.
Well, they just did Challenger 2. There's not another upcoming event for a little while.
Not I mean,
there's
Glint.
The new... The new cards are coming out, public playtest?
As far as I know, and I don't know if members of the committee have gotten back to you guys yet, as far as I know, the Guild Ball events for the ATC have been canceled.
Yes. Unfortunately, there just wasn't quite enough to make it a viable tournament structure this year. I mean, the hope is to build on it, next year, maybe have more people respond. I know Ben and you were looking into having a similar arrangement for Guild Ball that we had for War Machine, where the winning team would get to be on the WTC team and whatnot, and the timing just didn't work out this year.
Yeah, the WTC just ended, and the committee for it basically doesn't meet until like 6 months before the, it sounds like.
Well, so, I mean, maybe 6 months from now, we'll be able to touch base with those people and get something set in stone. We've got a full year now to try to get that arrangement.
Whereas, we might be able to set up something for the WITC to have Guild Ball at that then.
Sure, perhaps. Yeah, but the point is now we got a full year to talk to who we have to talk to see about making a similar arrangement next year, and then it could be just bigger and badder. Even though the speaking of ATC, and then we'll move on to your steamroller talk. But
I need to drink more.
We were at 32 teams. Oh, did you finish the? This is the hibiscus and ginger. That's is a full fledged mead, so it's a little stronger in flavor because of the hibiscus and ginger flavor. But it's not like IPA style. Yeah. But anyway, we thought we were at 32 teams when Sunum finished, but one team was listed twice, so we're actually at 31. So This is a limited time offer, but if one more team signs up, we got room for you. I mean, obviously, coming up soon is going to be list lock, and we're going to be sending out codes soonish to captains to be able to use Conflict Chamber like we did last year for the event to secretly lock your teams in there. But there is room for one more team, so don't drag your feet. If you want in and you missed the update, you got a window, sign up, send in your deposit, you're in.
What is the current what is the current date for list lock? There are a couple of, the only thing holding up the getting the stuff for Conflict Chamber is a couple of questions.
List lock is in January. I think it's like the 7th or something. I think it's the first weekend in January.
It's like the two usually it's 2 weekends before.
Yeah, I can double check with list lock before. Also, this to me was kind of a duh thing, but I've had several people ask about it, so I might as well make an announcement on this and then I'll make a post on it on our Facebook group. But the player packet has the timeline for the event listed out, and it has 3 rounds on Saturday and then 3 rounds on Sunday. And a lot of people are trying to plan their flights, and they're double-checking. There's 32 teams, well, 31 right now, but 32 teams, so it's going to be a 5-round event. So you can ignore that third round on Sunday. Like, going forward, the event will continue to grow, and we're going to cap it at 64, and that's why that's what the timeline is. But for this tournament, there's only going to be 5 rounds, so you can plan your flights accordingly. That should be all the ATC stuff.
Okay. Let's see. Just the other ATCs thing is we currently... So in the pipeline for Errata to hit for War Machine, the Crick CID results, which importantly for the competitive game, includes changes for Denegra 2 and nerfs for Denegra 1. And my understanding is that it is possible but unlikely those will hit before the ATC. I don't know if you have any more information on that, Nate.
I have no information on that.
Okay. They just released the Blindwater CID 2 weeks ago. So
yeah,
they're
usually about a month apart.
It is extremely unlikely that there will be any errata between list lock and the event. Extremely unlikely. If for some unforeseen reason there is, we will deal with it.
You guys can have the rest of that.
Yeah, sure.
I had my sip and I'm like, I'll drink the rest of it. I'll clean my plate.
Aw, good. There are starving kids in Africa who don't even get hibiscus and ginger mead, Andy.
So I forgot to mention, too, that I have a Guild Ball event that's actually happening on...
Splash, sorry.
...on January 20th over in Pegasus Games over in Madison. It's a kind of beginners-friendly event. I don't want to have too many sharks there, if we can. But we're going to try to run it as a beginners friendly event. So we have a lot of new people in our area that played it. And I think on February 24th, there is a snake draft that's happening over in Grognar Games that Ben Lang is running. So I don't know of any other War Machine events that are actually coming up other than the ATC. I was going to go to the event on Saturday, but I saw Last Jedi instead.
I did not. Yeah. We have a big family thing where 8 of us are going to go out to steak dinner and then go see Last Jedi. That's going to be our New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve? Or Christmas Eve?
Christmas Eve. Sorry, Christmas Eve. Sorry.
I was going to say.
No, we're not waiting 2 weeks. Christmas Eve.
How are you going to avoid the Facebooks by then? You should actually go. We should primer it. We should go see it on Tuesday.
I'm not going to see it before. Well, no. There's probably not even any tickets on Tuesday.
Probably not.
Like, New Year's Eve was the next time we could get decent tickets.
Yeah. To let you know, though, Brian did try to see if he can get tickets for you guys, too, but we could not find, like, 6 seats in a row. We'd have to split everyone up into small groups.
Well, that was nice.
For Saturday.
Doesn't matter. We'll see it. And if I catch some spoilers, I catch some spoilers. I got spoilers for the last one, and I survived.
Yeah.
Although, man, it was the most dickish spoilers ever. Some people are petty douche nozzles.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen it yet?
No.
Last try. Are you going to go see
it? Yes, I'm going to go see it soon. I just have not been able to allocate the time for it yet.
According to the internet, it's either the greatest or the worst thing that humanity has ever done.
Yeah, that's
it's very polarizing. I've seen the reviews for it. I would say that I did well in avoiding everything. So when I would page down to my Facebook feed and I would see somebody, I basically, if I saw the word Jedi, I just immediately closed my Facebook.
Right.
I forced myself not to read it. And that was a very hectic 4 days. So I wish you luck in your in your journey. All
right. Like I was watching a Twitch feed and the person on the stream mentioned that they were going to go see it like that evening, and so I immediately maximized the window so that the chat was hidden. Because I'm like, yeah, I understand how internet chat rooms work. Yeah. I'm not going to watch this.
Oh, that poor Twitch streamer. If he was reading his chat.
I'm looking forward to it, though, because most of the people that have seen it that I share broadly similar tastes in movies with have liked it. And the only person I know who hated it, I have zero in common with liking movies. So.
And the director, I mean, Brick and Looper, I mean, he does good stuff.
This was... Who was the? This was J.J. Abrams?
No.
He had some hands.
Abrams did 7 and 9. He's going to do 9, but he did 7 and he's going to do 9.
I think he had some either writing or producing credits in this one because his name was...
Producing, probably. Yeah, but no writing because I know that the director, Ryan... is it Johnson?
Ryan Johnson, yeah.
But it's Ryan with an I instead of a Y, which isn't how people spell Ryan. But anyway, he said that Abrams gave him literally zero plot information for 9. So, like, he couldn't, even if he wanted to, but...
Set anything up.
Right, exactly. Like, there's no setting up the whole, like, you know, Vader's Luke father kind of thing. Like, imagine if the person doing Empire didn't know that shit and had to do Empire with zero knowledge of how Jedi was going to go. For better or for worse, that's a bold choice.
Yeah, overall, though, I mean, I'm no spoilers. I liked it. I thought it was fun.
I have just been really happy that that they're actually making good Star Wars movies again. Because I mean, of course, the first movie I ever saw in the theater was Return of the Jedi when I was barely old enough to remember going to a movie.
Mine was The Shining.
You say good Star Wars movies, but so far there's been 2 new Star Wars movies, and only one of them was good.
You didn't like Rogue One?
No.
Rogue One was great.
Rogue One is probably it's very
it
close
way
to being
worse than any of the other non prequels.
Rogue One. I really it's a war movie that just happens to have a Star Wars theme to it, and I like that it's
of the Star Wars movies. I would rank Rogue One second behind Empire, and not by a lot. Because I just thought Rogue One was a fantastic movie.
I still think you need. I know everyone. I'm in the minority here. I really like A New Hope more than I like Empire, just because you need everything in A New Hope to set up Empire. You just watch Empire by
being the best isn't necessarily the same thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And honestly, yeah. I think A New Hope is vastly overrated. I mean, not that it's a bad movie, but I don't think it's nearly as good as a lot of Star Wars fans.
It's simultaneously underrated and overrated because. I think people who think it's the best are overrating it, and people who think it's the worst are overreacting and underrating it. I think it's a perfectly mediocre film. Like, by itself, it's
I wouldn't call it mediocre, but...
Well, in the original trilogy, it's the worst of the three.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, the... And here's where I get to pile controversy on top of controversy. Every movie in the original trilogy is better than the previous one. Fuck yeah, I went there. Jedi's better than Empire. Bring it, scrubs. I love Ewoks unironically. They're adorable and funny and scary. That's a good combo. But anyway, yeah, no, it's the best. Like, if as a film, it needed to be all self-contained, and so it kind of suffers from that a little bit. It's a little ham-handed, but you're right. It's necessary to set up the trilogy. It's a good intro to the trilogy. But if you're going to watch the whole trilogy, like, if you only get to watch one of the original three, it's the only one that functions as a self-contained film.
Correct.
So yeah, you're right. If you just said, hey, here's this movie called Empire, watch it. And you're like, duh, what? Muppets, what? And
exactly. Sure. Exactly. That's kind of the problem I have with it, is it is a stepping stone in that trilogy. It is, you know, it's I don't feel it's a very good self-contained film.
It's like, no, but within the trilogy, it's extremely strong.
Correct.
You know,
correct.
There's so much character development. There's so many great scenes. Like the duel on Cloud City is phenomenal.
And I will say though, we've talked about this before. Is the George Lucas special effects special presentation of Empire? I like that one a lot more than the original Empire, mainly for Cloud City itself.
But. Rogue One, I get. It's a war movie in Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. And I would have loved it if they'd been if they trusted the audience enough to just be like, this is the Star Wars universe. But they felt the need to just Ready Player One the shit out of it. There's like, hey, remember this? And they shove it in there. And they're like, hey, remember this? And they shove it in there. Like, I don't need... What? There's more to the Star Wars universe than AT-ATs.
But that was the point of the movie.
No, the point of the movie is a war film taking place in Star Wars, not to go down a checklist of every Star Wars t-shirt and go, people remember AT-ATs, people remember Admiral Akbar, people remember this. Let's shove all this shit into a movie and just have a drinking game where it's drink every time you see something that you remember from Star Wars.
I mean, it was coherent, and I think that's one of the awesome things about it, because it ended 5 seconds before A New Hope began, and what? I mean, the entire story led up to that, and
it is the only
AT-ATs are a terror shock trooper force. The reason AT-ATs exist is to invade planets. They are intentionally inefficient because they're scarier as giant walking monsters. That's why they're designed that way. So why are they a defensive unit on their own planet? The answer is because you remember them from your childhood.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's bad script writing. Is like, here's a thing that makes no sense, but people will remember it and they'll clap and smile. And that just bugged me.
I understand.
I still liked the movie well enough. I mean, I'm not saying I hated the film. I'm just saying that there's, you know, a little, like, every time something would happen, it would just grate on me a little bit, and it took me out of it.
I can understand that, but I mean, still, A, it was a good war movie. B, sure. I thought it was, I mean, I thought the ending was amazing, and just that, I mean, that everything, that
the ball is to kill everybody, you know.
Yeah, well,
congrats
on
that.
I mean, beyond that. Well, I mean, if you're, I mean, yes, okay. Spoilers. Everybody dies.
What? It's a movie about a suicide mission.
It's like, yeah. But if you are aware of Star Wars going into Rogue One, about 10 minutes into the movie, you should realize everybody in this film is going to die.
I think the other thing about that's really great about Rogue One, it does actually set up A New Hope in the movies further from there.
Yeah,
because everybody from in A New Hope and all those the first trilogy all proclaim how scary Darth Vader is. They tremble at Darth Vader's feet. But honestly, you never saw it. The only thing that you saw of him is him force choking a guy at a board meeting, and you got to see him, you know, cut down an old man.
But
never got to see Darth Vader being the scary thing that they've always talked about.
That was one of the things I absolutely loved in that.
I love that scene.
Yeah, that Darth Vader was the badass. Jason
Voorhees is here.
He was the force of nature that everybody said he was.
I've talked about this on this podcast before. But no, I mean, the prequels do that. I always appreciate, not the prequels, those three movies, but things that take place before A New Hope. You know, because somebody on my Facebook feed was talking about what's your favorite Star Wars moment, you know, in general, and mm-hmm. I posted the page from the comic where they try to capture him after downing his TIE fighter on a planet that I've talked about before, where all the rebels, there's like 1,000 of them.
I don't think you ever talked about this on the podcast.
They shoot his TIE fighter down on a planet.
Sure.
And he survives, and he's there, and like, you know, a couple hundred rebels surround him with their phasers. You know, they're not phasers, that's Star Trek. They're blasters. And they're like, you know, surrender, you're surrounded. And he says, all I'm surrounded by, and he turns his lightsaber on, is fear and dead men. And that's the most badass fucking thing. And then he kills all of them, and it's amazing. And so I appreciate that shit.
Slight spoiler about The Last Jedi is...
Darth Vader's in it?
No. No, he's not in it. Unfortunately, I really dislike the use of CGI Spock.
Is it at least old Spock?
No.
Or is it Zachary Quinto Spock?
Yeah, Zachary Quinto Spock his face pasted over it and his mustache removed. Yeah. I mean, the use of if we're still talking about Rogue One, I mean, yeah, Grand Moff Tarkin, they could have done less with him. I think they could have dealt with more shots of him from behind and him talking would have been fine.
Or more of him and less. Like, they introduced Krennic. I don't know. Whatever. I mean, it's okay. I don't hate the movie. I understand. I just wish, you know, be strong enough. Like, they even, you know, it's not an episode, right? It's a story in the Star Wars universe. So back off a little.
Yeah.
You know?
They didn't need to bring in the greatest hits. And I agree with that.
But whatever. Everything has its weakness, and that's, I think, Rogue One's weakness, is that it relies too much on those nostalgia beats.
It was honestly about the same thing. It's about the same thing with Force Awakens too.
Yeah,
Force Awakens was really trying to tap that that heartstring.
Yeah, that was I think the biggest weakness with Force Awakens.
And
it was X-wings blowing up a Death Star.
Everyone else complains about that in Force Awakens, and nobody else I hear everyone say that about Force Awakens, mm-hmm. and I'm the only one who says it about Rogue One. Well, and I was more okay with it in Force Awakens because the whole Star point Wars. Of Force Awakens. Well, so number one, it's a chapter, and so for some reason I feel like the part sevens, part eights need to be more homogenized, and also it was kind of necessary because unlike Rogue One, Force Awakens was the first Star Wars in a long time, and it needed to take us by the hand and say, hey, I know it's been a while, I know the prequels were bad, but I promise this is the Star Wars you remember. See, look, it's Chewbacca, look, it's TIE Fighters, and I'm like, yay! Like, to me, they needed to do that just to make me trust them again.
I don't know. I mean, I would argue that it was less of a problem in Rogue One because it wasn't a reused central plot element. I mean, it's like you have some of the military units.
Excuse you, building a giant weapon inside of a planet is way different than building a giant weapon the size of a planet. Extremely different plot point, David.
I have defended that the Empire or the First Order is doing that again, because this is one of the things you learn in engineering for large corporations is that you focus on core competencies, and clearly their engineering staff is much better at planetary scale weapons.
Also, so everything that the First that Order shit. Does, it's just like, hey, guys, remember that cool stuff the Empire did? We should do that. We got stormtroopers. We got a Sith guy with a helmet. Yeah. We got a planet with a laser in it. We're just like the Empire.
Well, I mean, that was one of the things I absolutely love about Kylo Ren is that he is a Darth Vader fanboy, mm-hmm. Beginning to end. And I think it's amazing that a core part of that is the cult of personality around Darth Vader.
Again, haven't seen Last Jedi yet, but just based on Force Awakens, Kylo Ren is one of my favorite characters in cinematic history. He is amazingly well executed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. good.
I can't say nothing.
The filmmakers knew what they needed to do, and they did it flawlessly.
Chet better Kylo not Ren. Say anything either, because I'm banning. And actually, what that means is I'm probably going to promote you to moderator.
No!
What was I going to say? Oh, I think also the reason why they ended up using walkers and all the AT-ATs and the AT-STs on the planet is I don't think they wanted to invent something that wouldn't fit into the timeline. So, like, if the Empire had some kind of weird walker thing or its weird defense system thing.
Yeah, it was supposed to look like the New Hope Empire Strikes Back technology level for the
correct,
sure,
correct.
Get that, but they also could. I mean, AT-STs I'm okay with, but they didn't. Sure. They had AT-ATs.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they're just AT-STs stored there for and use. Stormtroopers I'm okay with, but they had an invasion shock troop. Yeah, I don't know.
Like, they could have been stored there at like some kind of bunker, and that's what they right. make them there, and then they ship them off.
I get your point that you don't want the droideka problem like you had from the prequels.
Yeah, the Phantom droids. Menace. Yeah, yeah, like where the yeah. fuck is these like, things? Why is everything shiny? What
Why
the
doesn't
fuck?
The Empire use those? Those seem really effective.
The shiny is my biggest problem with the prequels is that I have said this before, that it wasn't just that in the prequels that everyone was clean. Because in the original trilogy, I think I mean, Star Wars works best as a Western. Because I mean, the original trilogies were Westerns.
Lived in.
Yeah, I mean, and a core of that is that in the original trilogy in Star Wars, the good guys were dirty, and it wasn't that the bad guys were clean; it was the bad guys were sterile.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the prequels, everyone was clean, and it just didn't work. And then in Force Awakens, I love Force Awakens because they got that back.
Even
the first
the
order
Skywalker's house. In the Phantom Menace,
it's too clean.
Anakin and his mom live in a really nice little three bedroom apartment. It's like you are slaves.
That is
you
a beautiful
be living in a ditch.
That is a beautiful slave quarters.
Yeah, like wow.
That has enough technology Watto there for
really
you to
well.
Build a fucking robot.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. That cannot be profitable as a slave owner to give them a home better than mine.
Well, we don't know about Watto. He's
Yeah, I mean that was my core thing. That I mean, it worked so much better when they went with the Force Awakens, when they went back to the model that yes, the good guys are scruffy, and that's part of it, and the bad guys aren't just clean; they're excessively so. They're sterile.
I got it from the Phantom Menace. I was okay with the Phantom Menace in the sense where everything was clean in there, because it comes all the ships and everything there are royalty. Basically, it's all coming from. I understand the
reason for it. I mean, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work in the same way as a story. And I think that was one of the fundamental limitations of it, is that it wasn't really Star Wars, because everything was too clean. Everything was too functional. Everything was just too perfect. And then Force Awakens gets back to that there's dust everywhere, and they have this old technology that still works, and that's what they use without having access to all of the shiny and hovery and glowy stuff.
I love the fact that one of the first planets that they explode in the Force Awakens is Coruscant.
Yeah, well, take that.
Yeah, take that, prequels and outside canon.
Was it Coruscant?
Coruscant was a role-playing game.
That was Imperial Capital.
No, well, Coruscant, that was...
He blew up a system in Force Awakens, but I didn't think it was the one that Coruscant was on. Because I know it was the Capital, but I thought, the Capital had moved. I read something about, blah, blah, blah. Because a lot of people were confused about why the Republic has a resistance if the Republic won. Why is there what's the deal here? Why does Leia have to have a resistance when she's on the side that's ruling everything? And the answer was that the Republic struck a treaty with the remainder of the Empire, which was the First Order. And so Leia made a resistance within, a little offshoot that was still fighting against them despite the treaty. Mm-hmm. And the Capital, as part of that treaty, moved to some other system that wasn't Coruscant. And that system is what the system crushing laser Starkiller. Gun, the Starkiller base, destroyed in Force Awakens.
I thought it was actually Coruscant. It may not be. It looks like Hosnian Prime.
Yeah, the Hosnian system. The Hosnian system that was blown up.
But that was. I mean, if you don't look at the external universe, even at the end of Jedi, I mean, it's that everybody was celebrating the victory, but that was a major battle, and they assassinated the Emperor.
Right.
And it doesn't really say.
I think you'll find in Return of the Jedi that the only people celebrating the victory are the people on the forest moon of Endor, because the special editions don't exist because they blow anus.
Nub, nub.
Yeah, no, keep nub, nub. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fine. Not the fucking Yanni replacement music and then cuts to 17 other planets. Why are Gungans celebrating a battle that just happened? They don't fucking know. God damn it. Fucking Hayden Christensen's ghost. Eat my balls, Lucas. Piece of shit.
Yeah, there was no reason.
He fucking testified that people shouldn't fuck with old movies because there's a purity in keeping art the way it was. And then he goes on to...
I know you don't like the special editions, but like I said, I always liked Empire's special edition. But I agree with the fact that all the Force Ghosts represent those models when those people died.
But when he turned to be Vader, that's when Anakin Skywalker truly died.
No.
And so his ghost looks like that.
Says Lucas's flapping jowl parasite.
No, no.
Brian has listed 50% of the acceptable changes in chat. The windows in Cloud City were good.
Yes.
And when the Emperor is communicating with Vader in Empire via hologram, the makeup on the original one looks really, really bad. Yeah, he looks like some kind of a chimp monster. Yep. And so the corrected Emperor hologram is good. That's fucking it. Those two are it.
Yeah. I don't think there's many other changes that happened in Empire.
My least favorite of them.
They walked one of them back. Luke screamed as he fell down the Cloud City shaft in the theatrical release of the special editions, and that was so infuriatingly bad that they walked back that change for the DVD releases.
Okay. Well.
Because instead of him bravely committing suicide and sacrificing himself instead of joining with Vader, he just slipped and fell, I guess, and he's like, oops, oh, fuck. Fuck you. Anyway, sorry, David.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the worst one, the worst of the changes was Han Solo stepping on Jabba's tail.
The whole scene with Han Solo.
Oh, yeah, that was,
yeah, the whole, yeah, that
whole scene is fucking terrible. But within that scene, him stepping on Jabba's tail is the worst. His teleporting head is also bad.
Yeah. But I mean, just the Han Solo steps on Jabba the Hutt's tail is probably the worst thing Lucas has ever done.
That's in Episode Four. That's not in. That's also random beast just walking in front of the camera when you're trying to look over this glorious looking city.
Yeah, I'm just saying Lucas has done a lot of terrible things. And I think the tail stepping, the scene is close to it, and then the stepping on the tail
is the worst thing he has done. Yeah, that is far worse than anything in Howard the Duck.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, anything. Play duck with ducks who have duck tits despite not being mammals is better than Han Solo stepping on Jabba the Hutt's tail while he makes big goofy eyes.
Oh, no, I
my tail.
I haven't watched Howard the Duck in such a long time. I know I liked that movie as a child. I really liked that movie as a child so much that my uncle and my father were
not a child-appropriate movie.
Yeah, I know. Were very annoyed with me when I wanted to watch Howard the Duck all the time. Because it is a really, really bad movie. I understand that, but I enjoyed it as a child.
I think it's a really cheesy movie. I don't think it's fine. Howard the Duck is a perfectly cromulent film.
Maybe it's something age-appropriate, though, or not age-appropriate, because I'm actually annoyed with all of the cameos that he's been given in
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, basically in the Marvel film so far, because
of them are in Guardians.
Yeah, both of them are in Guardians.
Yeah, he appears in both Guardians films.
Yeah.
Who
first
knows?
First one was a great like, hey, look, it's Howard the Duck. I'm like, oh, fuck it, leave, please.
No, that's fine. And then the second one, he's in a brothel, which totally makes sense for Howard the Duck.
Correct.
Voiced by Seth Green.
I don't know. I mean,
I
think you could put. Well, I mean, he's a Marvel character.
Yeah.
And Guardians of the Galaxy is the perfect place to have Howard the Duck make a cameo.
We need to have slapstick in fucking a Marvel film. So I can have the secret.
We do have slapstick. We have people like slipping and falling and stuff.
No, you know what I'm talking about. Slapstick. Slapstick as in the actual character. Because there is a sequence that happened in a comic book that is probably one of my favorite moments ever. It is with him and Daredevil are having a conversation. And Daredevil is wearing his outfit, you know, his all red outfit. He's like, what? Your outfit? It's just all red. Who's that designed by? It was like, by a blind person?
I don't know. I mean, are we really going to complain about Howard the Duck in the Marvel, in the sci-fi side of the Marvel universe when our when I think everyone at this table, our favorite line from the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe is "Piss off, Ghost."
Piss off, Ghost. It's a good line.
It's pretty much up there.
It's currently my most quoted. I say that at least seven times a day right now.
I like how long after Loki disappears that he comes
delay.
There's like a good like 10-second delay before he comes.
Piss off, Ghost.
My friend Chris has yet to see it, and I think he's going to miss it being in theaters. So I'm going to try to see if buying tickets for next week.
But that also the other thing I absolutely loved in the movie was just the sort of the physical comedy with that when they had Loki tied up, that Lord walks up and throws something at his face just to make sure he's real.
Oh yeah. We could talk about the Fox and Disney merger.
Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, it's nice that we're going to be able to not have to step around the Scarlet X-Men. Witch versus not Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver versus not Quicksilver. Like, it's nice that we don't have to step around that shit. It'll be cool to have Magneto in an Avengers film. You know, it'll be cool. On the other hand, you know, corporate bloat, plutocracy, the world is death and chaos.
How about the stupid fucking lame argument that I keep on seeing everybody posting about the goddamn xenomorphs being Disney princesses?
We have been over this.
I know we've been over this, but it still persists out there.
The xenomorphs are either male as drones or asexual as warriors. They're definitely not females.
They're not females.
The only female xenomorph in the Alien series is the newborn from Alien Resurrection, which is a movie that this is the only time I'll ever admit exists is to win this argument. None of the other ones are female.
Yeah. That's how I think it sounds like.
Yeah, fucking A.
Yeah, that horrible abomination that you see in Alien 4 Resurrection, that is your princess.
There's your Worship Disney it. Princess, yeah.
I want to see people cosplaying.
Although it's, yeah.
At Disneyland.
You go to Disneyland and there's the Xenomorph Island and you get your pictures taken with the newborn with their big bug vagina hanging out and her tits. That tits.
Oh, yeah.
Why did it have tits, David?
I don't know.
Why did that movie exist?
I blocked that movie out of my mind.
I technically owned that movie because I bought the quadrilogy, and the first thing I did when I got home was open it, take Alien 4, throw it under my couch, and forget it was there for a decade.
Yeah, Arctic Circle, you're missing that. They're queens. That means they're not princesses.
Correct. A queen is not a princess.
Yes.
Maleficent is not a Disney princess. The evil queen from Snow White is not a Disney princess.
Yep.
Princesses are princesses.
And Queen Amidala is not a Disney princess either, but Princess Leia is because she's a princess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they're both senators.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Damn them. Ending our net neutrality. Yeah. Actually, the Senate didn't do that. Sorry.
Nope. That's the glory of democracy. You don't even need the Senate to do that. You just need three random assholes voting on party lines against 85% of the population.
Yeah. I brought us into politics. I'm sorry. So, no, Xenomorphs.
Unrelated, my favorite Metallica album is Kill Them All.
We already posted that like four episodes ago.
Yeah, I'm just going to re-mention Kill Them All. These are two separate topics, the Republicans with net neutrality and Kill Them All. I'm not technically saying anything. These are two separate topics.
Second favorite album from Metallica is Master of Puppets?
And my third favorite album is Every GOP Politician Should Commit Suicide. That may or may not be an album. It would be a good album title.
What do you mean Massachusetts? So is California. So is Washington.
There's like
Mississippi
13,
and Kentucky.
There were 17 states.
Them?
Like within an hour of the announcement, 17 states were suing them. I don't know if anybody else had jumped on board, but
yeah,
Wisconsin is not. Wisconsin I know that, is not, unfortunately. Yeah.
Somebody has pointed out, and I'll mention this, is that this has happened. The last two times that we all, you know, railed about net neutrality was at the courts, because both of those times the FCC had voted to repeal it, and then the courts overturned that vote. So we've been here before. Kill Them All is a good album.
So Disney, I mean,
yes,
yeah.
The amazing, I mean, it sucks. It sucks in the sense where, I mean, Disney, it just becomes bigger and becomes more of a corporate bloat than it is. But at the same time, I don't feel that it's really going to change much in the movies. In
the grand scheme of things, I'm much less worried about consolidation of entertainment as opposed to consolidation of like other things, and especially like net neutrality. I think in shit that has happened in the past week, that the consolidation of Disney and Fox is a tiny fraction of
Let's not overlook the fact that Disney blackballed a reputable news outlet because they spoke badly about them. I mean, it's not just like, oh no, they'll get all of our media money. They are a conglomerate with power.
I would be a lot more concerned if Disney was also acquiring Fox's news and Fox's non-entertainment, because they're buying the movie studios and the IPs associated with that, as I understand.
They just picked up the movies.
You said Fox's news, but Fox doesn't have anything to do with news. Oh, yes, Fox's propaganda channel. Sure, yeah. Yeah.
I'm a whole lot less concerned about consolidation of entertainment as opposed to consolidation of journalism or consolidation of internet stuff and changes for internet neutrality.
Some people have been worried because, I mean, Disney, you think Disney, you think family friendly. And so I've lost count of the number of people who are like, what about Deadpool? Because now they own Deadpool. It's like there have been plenty of R-rated films released by Disney. Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction is a Disney film.
Yep.
They own Touchstone Entertainment when that came out.
Yep.
Calm down.
Well, no, yeah. I mean, not just they own Touchstone. Touchstone was a division of Disney.
Right.
Disney specifically created by Disney so that they could make R-rated movies without it having the Disney logo.
Correct.
On them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to see any changes. I mean,
yeah.
If Disney owned Logan, I mean, if they owned Fox when Logan came out, that movie would have probably still been the same.
Yeah.
Probably
fucking good
movie. God, also, damn, also if you anybody so listening, good. If you have not seen Logan, watch it. Fuck, it is. God,
I wept amazing. Like a baby in the credits. Like Raylene was just sitting awkwardly next to me while I just cried. In fairness, you know. Dad died like a year before I saw Logan. So
can you imagine now seeing Hugh Jackman running around with like Captain America now? I feel like seriously. I mean that like the second like they show they show us Iron Man, they show us Captain America, and they show us Professor Xavier and fucking and Wolverine, just like in a meeting.
Can you imagine tacos. If the because the Infinity Wars. There's going to be Infinity Wars 1 and 2, and that's going to be basically the end of this chunk of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Correct. There'll be some bleed over, but it's going to be a pretty good stopping point. Can you imagine like if they relaunched and finally made a good Fantastic Four movie and blended that stuff together? Like, if you had a Fantastic Four with the X-Men, like, if you had all this shit together?
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
And then Disney buys DC, and we have everything, and we can have Superman versus Wolverine.
No.
Yeah, everything. No. Everything.
No.
I don't know. I'm just looking.
I don't think Warner Brothers is going to sell.
This probably means that Patrick Stewart will get a cameo in the Infinity Wars movie. That somebody will have a video chat with Xavier in the background at some point.
I don't think they'll have that. I think if they do anything for Infinity War, because that's pretty much, from my understanding, it's pretty much done filming. If they have anything for something like that, it would be a teaser. A trailer
there
at the
be,
end.
Yeah,
or
there
something.
May be a trailer. But I'm just saying at the level of a picture of Patrick Stewart as Professor Xavier on somebody's screen in the background, just for nerds that go through frame by frame and say, "Look, he's in the movie."
Yeah,
and it'll be awesome, even though only like three people will notice it before they take the screenshots.
Or
Ridley viral. Scott has a movie that comes out, I think, next Friday, like this coming Friday, and he refilmed the main character. Like over the last 2 weeks.
Oh, that's with what's his name?
Yes.
Yeah. I can't think of his name.
Like,
now.
You want to talk about like, oh, it's coming out soon. Filming's already done. He replaced. What would be fucking hilarious is if the new guy got like an Oscar.
Oh man. No, but I mean, I could see something happening in either. They could even film it for Black Panther. I mean, Black Panther could have something tied onto it by now.
Yeah.
The end credits sequence of that of I mean, I would really like it for Marvel to actually to finally stop calling things Inhumans
versus mutants.
Yeah. Because that's the only thing that's really held me back in the S.H.I.E.L.D. show is that everyone's called Inhumans in there. And I know the Inhumans, they're a bad TV show on the same channel. But they also live on the moon.
That
but I mean,
fucking showrunner. Oh my God, that guy's got he's batting zero.
He must have did something really good for somebody that
Lord.
Either made somebody a ton of money or something, because he has a job.
So bad.
And yet we don't have a Firefly season 2.
Yeah. And
that's the other thing that Disney now owns now too, is Firefly. There you go. Get the hype train started. It's coming. It's coming. Season 2. Firefly.
But also, I just love Patrick Stewart, and so, I mean, any movie is going to be more awesome even if it just has a cameo by Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, I don't know. He said he was done after Logan, but...
Well, I know that Hugh Jackman had said if there was ever a crossover with the MCU, that he would don the claws again, in a sense. So, I mean, this is what is closest saying that there'll be a crossover of some sort.
Well, I just put in... So I typed Scott Buck into Google, and it auto completed Scott Buck worst showrunner.
that was like what the first results are. Let's see.
Well, that was one of the auto completions because Scott Buck is the fucking worst.
So let me see if it's
if it find see a movie what? Called The Green
nope.
Room.
Oh, mine does not as. Yeah, it just has Iron Fist for mine, so mine is not to.
Because he showrunner for Inhumans.
Yeah, and Iron
Fist. Showrunner for Iron Fist, and showrunner for season 6 and 7 of Dexter.
Oh, really? That was him?
He was the showrunner for the last 2 seasons of Dexter. Like, it's beyond just Iron Fist and Inhumans. Those are his 3 showrunning credits, are Iron Fist, Inhuman, and the last 2 seasons of Dexter. Like, he's so fucking terrible.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, also Arctic Circle is saying David should find a movie called The Green Room. I have no idea what we mentioned that's calling
Wait, hold on.
I don't say anything. But it's true. Sell us on this.
No, no, I will sell you on this. Okay. Green Room is a good movie.
Okay.
It is, do you like horror?
It's not the White Room. It's not the White Room with black curtains at the station.
Yeah. So Green Room, you know, to summarize the plot with a, you know, not really spoilers, but with the spoiler of the MacGuffin, it's a punk band. Mm-hmm. They're desperate for money, so they do a show at like a neo-Nazi compound in the South, right? And they're after the show, they're in the green room, and they witness a murder, and they need to try to figure out how the fuck to not just be also murdered.
Okay.
And Patrick Stewart is in it. Oh, that's probably Patrick Stewart. Oh, you said anything with Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
Patrick Stewart is the head neo-Nazi. Then so it's Patrick Stewart versus Chekhov from the new Star Trek movies. I think it's third to last film before he died. But Green Room's good.
So he's actually brought some decent stuff, Scott Buck. I'm looking at his writing credits.
He has some writing credits, sure.
He's
but
got
as
Tremors
showrun-
4.
As showrunner.
Tremors 4.
As showrunner, he is abysmal.
He's got some 6 Feet Under, which I hear is good for that series. I've
Six
never
Feet Under was really good.
It's just like Moffat. Moffat's a good writer of episodes and a terrible showrunner.
He wrote basically 17 episodes of Dexter.
But yeah, no, Green Room. It's probably on Netflix. If you like, because it's not like spooky ghost or slasher movie horror. It's more like Hitchcockian, you know, stressful horror.
I don't really care for the supernatural.
There's no supernatural. It's people versus people.
Yeah.
It is fairly brutal in its violent depiction.
Gotta be one of his last films.
Huh? Yeah, I said Green Room's in one of his last films. But you should see it. It's if you like at all crime/drama/ psychological horror, it's a good film. It's got a lot of people doing smart things and people doing stupid things and people dying regardless of which of those two things they do. It's a good film.
Also, that just reminds me that a friend of mine had told me that Patrick Stewart was his favorite actor, and I also found out that he was a huge fan of Arthurian legend. Mm-hmm. I said, "Oh, so you must love Excalibur?"
Sure.
And his response was, "What?
Oh, fuck that!
He doesn't know. You don't know about Excalibur?"
And yeah, and I was like,
you immediately hogtied him, threw him in the trunk of your car, and drove him to a video store. Got Excalibur. Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's kind of the thing that would get me kicked out of my job. So no.
But you just do it where there's no cameras.
We got to watch Excalibur in high school literature class, you know, and it was great because there were titties. It's always nice when there was films that you had to watch for, like, Shakespearean reasons and you got to see boobs in them when you were, like, a 15-year-old kid. You're like, yeah. Come on.
I can't tell you the last time I've seen...
1960s version of Romeo and Juliet. We watched that in, like, HP literature, and it's like, I saw boobs! And we just giggled for the rest of the...
Did you watch Arnold Schwarzenegger in Hamlet?
We did not watch Arnold Schwarzenegger in Hamlet.
Damn it! I want all the B movies that were in the Last Action Hero to be made. I want all of them to be made.
Kenneth Branagh Hamlet is very good.
He does like really good Shakespeare in general.
Yeah,
that's what he does well. That's why Thor is so that style. Mm-hmm. Is because of him.
Very Shakespearean. Yeah, it is. They really took a hard left turn with Thor in the third film and made it much wackier, just because of how successful the Guardians films had been, I think. And I think they decided that people were bored with... Like, Thor as a character always had moments when he was lighthearted, but they kind of tried to balance having him be stoic and have him be lighthearted, and in the third film they're like, fuck it, Thor's goofy.
Well, pretty much. It's not even necessarily that Thor is goofy. Thor is a straight man. And Thor is the straight man in a cosmic comedy, and it works.
Sure, but in the first film, he is like very straight man, and then he'll get hit by a bus, and you'll see his butt, and it's all, you know, there's funny moments, but he is straight man, like he is Zeppo serious straight man.
Sure.
I mean, sure, he likes to drink and he likes to fight, but he's very serious about drinking and fighting even.
Yeah.
But in the third film, he's in on the joke.
Oh, yeah. Like second one, he's you just see him opening up a little bit, and that.
Yeah.
But that was more of situational, too. That's honestly, maybe, no.
Not much.
Not that much.
He has some emotional connection with Loki, but he's still, there's serious moments. Like, Thor isn't wacky, sure. You know? It's but the third film, he's like, you could see a pie fight in that movie. And you would be like, yeah, sure, pie fight. Why not? There could have been a pie fight in Thor Ragnarok, and I would not have been surprised.
Pie off, Ghost.
Either way. Anyway. It was fine. I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed, enjoyed the lighthearted moments.
Thor Ragnarok was a great movie, but I mean it seemed closer to Guardians of the Galaxy 3 than that. But I mean I thought both of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies were fantastic.
I'm just saying compare Thor 1 to Thor 3. And those are entirely different films.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, Thor 1 to Thor 2 is actually very, very different too, in my opinion.
I honestly have not seen Thor 2 because nobody has ever recommended it.
Thor 2 is great.
Thor 2 is amazing.
Okay.
We'll watch it after this if you want.
And yeah, I don't have anywhere to be until midnight, so I'm fine.
I'm supposed to play games with Chris after this,
though. Fuck Chris. Eat a dick, Chris. I'm flicking you off.
Oh, wow. He's going to see this tomorrow when he's at work, and he's going to be upset.
I love you, Chris. Chris is a good
Thor
guy.
Chris could not make it through your Gwen talk last week. He tried very hard to make it through it. He could not do
Chris,
it.
Chris, play Gwen, and then listen to that episode again.
All right, so since we're talking about games, okay, I've got some War Machine talk.
What?
So I am working.
Are we going to talk about the thing from yesterday?
Yes,
there was an event yesterday.
There was an event yesterday, a steamroller in Milwaukee yesterday, and my wife was not working, so I was able to go.
Check it out.
And
are you checking out too? I'm checking out too.
Oh, talk about your event. It's fine.
Yep, go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to the Gwent thread.
Gwent. Okay. So I'll
try to engage you, David, to hold a conversation while Nathan stares at his phone.
I'm still listening.
So there was a steamroller event yesterday in Milwaukee, and it was pretty nice because I was happy because I'm working on my ATC pairing, and I'm still not sure. It may be Harkovich, or I may just say fuck it and play Kalissa.
That is not in the same faction.
No. No, I mean, I'm going to main either Kalissa or Harkovich, and then come up with an appropriate pairing for one of them. Because if I could, I would play Kalissa slash Harkovich, but that's not exactly allowable.
I'm wondering if they could change that for Steamroller now.
What?
Enough armies out there where you could possibly do it like Iron Gauntlet style, where you can actually take two different factions. The original Iron Gauntlet.
That fucks with List Chicken so much.
It does.
I mean, in our discussions in our team for planning for stuff, I'd kind of said that I'm not sure that we shouldn't say, oh, well, what's your Crix list, as opposed to what is your Denny One Ghost Fleet answer, because Crix as a faction is not as coherent as it was in Mark II. I mean, it's that you have Denny One Ghost Fleet, and one of the properties that Denny One has is there is this list of other lists that she can be paired with.
Sure.
I don't really focus on factions as opposed to casters, and the two right now I'm most interested in are Harkovich and Kalissa. So I will main one of the other two and then have a pairing that hopefully shores up some weaknesses for them. But so I was initially trying to convince myself that Harkovich wasn't as good as I had originally thought on Theory Machine, and I went into a steamroller with two games worth of experience with Harkovich, came in, went 3-1, lost second place on tiebreak, and the one game I lost was on clock to a nationally known player, and I was dominating the board at the time I lost and was literally two rolls away from winning.
Could there have been something in the game that you might have been able to save some time? Like, basically, so you were talking that you only played the list like twice. So up to that point, it was like five times before you actually took on that player.
Yeah, this was my fifth game with Harkovich. So definitely with some more practice, it wouldn't have been a problem. And I mean, maybe I could have even played better, but honestly, the board I was in a very dominating position on the way the board looked out, and I couldn't really look at this and say, well, if I could have played better, it wouldn't have made any difference. I just needed to play faster at that point. So I was pretty pleased with that, and also surprised that more people aren't talking about Harkovich, and even more surprised that when people do talk about Harkovich, they talk about the Marauder build instead of the Kodiak build, because the Kodiak build is just terrifying. And I won one of my games on the top of four by scenario, and there were two models. There were two models removed from play on the entire game, and one of them was a solo, and one of them was a choir boy. And I still won on scenario because that's what the list does.
Nice. So, well, what it was. Did you talk more about the details of the list?
Oh, the list I am running. I am running Harkovich in Jaws of the Wolf, which is an awesome theme because you can take all the jacks you want. You get free stuff based on the jacks. And it allows Kayazi and allows Kossite Woodsman, although you shouldn't ever take Kossite Woodsman. But so this ends up being an amazing combination. Oh, also you can take Yuri the Axe, who you can get for free, and Manhunters. And so this allows you a number of things that are really cool. One, you can take Kayazi Eliminators, which are a 5-point unit of two models, and they are speed 7, stealth, def 15 duelist, so they're def 17 in melee, and they have gang, combo strike, and anatomic precision. So they're really good at getting at they're really good at two things. One is getting in the way because they're either def 15 stealth or def 17 in melee, which is hard for a lot of things to kill. And with speed seven in that, they're really good at getting behind the other guy's front line and murdering the hell out of support. Also, they have parry and acrobatics because why the fuck not?
Sure.
And so all this combined, they are amazing circle zone holders. They're great at killing support. And if it comes down to it, with gang and combo strike, that you get with the unit, you get two POW 15 charges, which is non-trivial.
Sure.
And then for the free stuff, if you take 90 points of jacks, which I do, you then get three free solos, which you can take Yuri the Axe and two Manhunters. Which, while I had originally played a marksman with that, marksman instead of one of the Manhunters, I realized that I think I like Yuri plus Manhunters better. And the main reason for that is they all have stealth. And one of the changes to Jaws of the Wolf was that they added Yuri as a free option. And Yuri is great by himself because he is a stealth POW 13 range 2 weapon master. Yep. With Thresher, and he has Forest Walk, and he has elite cadre Manhunters giving them Forest Walk. And when you have three solos that have stealth, are weapon masters, and have Forest Walk with Steamroller 17 terrain placement, they are really good because you hide them behind forests. They can see through the forests, and other things can't see through to them. So you get this list that has... My list has, as I said, four Kodiaks, four Marauders. You get eight Heavy Jacks that are all arm 20. Harkovich gives them mobility, plus two speed, and mobility, which is plus two speed in Pathfinder. He gives them reposition 3. So they are fast. Also, Kodiaks have heavy boilers, so they get plus 2 inches on running. So they run 14 inches first turn. You have fast... eight fast arm 20 heavies, and then two stealth units and three stealth solos for scenario presence. And so you run forward, you cloud wall with the Kodiaks, reposition behind the clouds, and make it so that it is extremely difficult for the other guy to do anything, because outside of Legion and a couple of things like a serious feet turn, you can't charge through clouds. And there are very few things in the game that can kill arm 20 jacks without charging.
Ha! Joke's on you. The witch doctor crocodile that gives Isla sight.
Yeah, to one model.
Yeah.
Is it the witch doc croc or is it not the witch doc croc?
It's the misspeaker. I know I was wrong when I started. The fish that gives Isla sight to
the bark talk.
Yep. So I'm really happy with the list. And as I said, I had the most Harkovich game when I won on the fourth turn with two warrior models destroyed the entire game.
Sure, because you just armored up and shoved people out of the zones.
I mean, to be fair, the other guy was playing Durst, and like on one turn he feeded, which is plus 4 armor to his battle group, and then the next turn I feeded, which is plus 3 armor to mine, and neither of us had the damage output to seriously hurt the other guy.
Right.
But I had lots of slams and throws, and he couldn't stop that. So,
fair enough. Oh, you're very small. Andy turned you down, and now you got tiny.
Bah! Yep.
Well, no, that was loud again. You overcompensated.
Sorry.
It'll equalize later.
Okay. What else? Oh, and Yeah. Also, it turns out vent steam on the Kodiaks is one of the most broken abilities in the game. Mm-hmm. I don't mean so. I mean, maybe not broken overpowered, although I think it is overpowered, but just the way it works mechanically is broken as hell.
How's that?
It's one of those abilities that is not an attack.
Right.
It just causes damage rolls without an attack associated. Right. So it gets around a lot of things. Like, sure. I was playing into Orion, who has the ability that if you kill an enemy attack kills warriors, he gets a ranged vengeance move.
Sure.
And
Attack.
Yeah, sure. Vent Steam does that without doing it.
Yep.
It auto hits, but it's a damage roll by the model, so you can boost it with focus on them, which gets around a lot of things. I mean, there are a number of Grimkin abilities that require some of the Grimkin stuff that is not triggered by it because you can just vent on something and still get boosted attacks. It's not an attack.
Mm-hmm.
Auto hitting is of course nice because one of the games I played was against Una 2 and just walked up and had a couple of them walk up close to a couple of Griffins with put focus on them, and all of a sudden I've got auto hitting POW 12s, which I mean it's great into infantry, but if you can boost those on arm 13 lights,
yep. Well, those lights they're built as glass cannons.
Yeah, so when they survive on their defense and you get right past the defense. Yeah. I'm actually kind of surprised Vent Steam doesn't work the same way as... and I'm not surprised. I understand their different abilities, but like Shrapnel Swarm, there's the base-to-base damage and then there's the further out damage. And Vent Steam just being a flat damage roll regardless of distance is...
Well, the other thing is it's the conflagration that Castigators and Phoenixes...
Yep.
And Phoenix's have is very similar in that it just auto hits everything close to it. Although the biggest difference is conflagration is a star action, and where Vent Steam is on the overpowered end of broken, Vent Steam is an anytime ability.
Yep.
So you can
trample and
you can trample and you can trample and do it. You can Vent Steam and then run, or you can charge Vent Steam and then take your charge attack and do all of these in any order.
It's just adding a little fluff to it. Mm-hmm. I would say that it should only be able to Vent Steam if you do one of those abilities. Like if you're just standing
it should be after running, charging, or trampling.
Yeah.
I mean, Vent Steam...
I mean, it doesn't change it that much.
No.
I mean, Vent Steam would be... Kodiaks would be playable if this change was made. I would not be excited about this Harkovich list, but I mean, Vent Steam is an anytime ability that the model that it's on would be playable if it were a star action instead of an anytime.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't be playing this list because the bullshit of this list, and anybody that knows me know that I am drawn like a fly to bullshit when it comes to list building. I wouldn't be playing this list if it was that way, but if Vent Steam were a star action, the Kodiak would still be playable. I mean, that's how good the ability is, and it's an anytime ability.
Yeah, or a star attack even versus star action.
Yeah, if it was a star attack, then it would
then he could do it. He could charge and do it at the end of the charge still, and then buy attacks.
No, it would have to be on a weapon.
It has to be on a weapon.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe, well, whatever.
I mean, yeah, conflagration, the one that Protectorate and Retribution has is a star attack that's not on a weapon.
Right, so it doesn't have to be a weapon. It just has to specifically...
But they can't charge with it, though.
You can if it specifically says it can be done on a charge. Okay. To charge with a star attack, it either has to be tied to a weapon or specifically violate that rule. And so you could say you may vent steam after charging. You may conflagrate after charging. You could do that. And then you just run up and vent on them, and then you can buy attacks.
They need to change,
but you don't still get your initials.
Have that, I would love to have that with the old. I mean, that's probably my favorite protector jack is the Castigator, and it's a jack that, well, at the time was the only jack that looked that way, and I always liked the look of the giant power fist with the wires going up into its back. It looked fucking awesome. A bitch to put together, but it looked awesome.
Yeah, the cables are not properly connected because I spent way too much time on it and said, fuck this, and dealt with it.
You didn't know me at the time, I would have been.
Yeah.
I have.
But yeah, I mean, the Castigator would be a lot better if Conflagrate were more like Vent Steam. And this is kind of the situation that I don't really understand why there's that much of a difference and why Vent Steam is similar but so amazingly better.
Yeah.
Sure.
because otherwise the jacks are pretty similar. They're both two POW 16 open fists, and while the Castigator has plus one speed, the Kodiak has Pathfinder built in and heavy boiler for extra speed running.
Yep.
So if anything, across the board, I think the Kodiak is a better jack, and then has a drastically superior special ability.
Yep. All right. So we should probably. We're pretty close to
whatever
an hour and a half.
I could talk a little bit about Brugger Hoog.
No.
Could you Brugger Hoog into Hattori, who then gets you Barclay Elves out of your discard, and then he brings. There's a dwarf that you pull another bronze out of your deck, and so it's a five unit play. It's a good play.
Try him.
But Brugger Hoog is still garbage. He's the worst Scoia'tael leader, even with that.
So close to hitting credits.
I'm just saying. I was surprised I actually saw Brugger Hoog at level 18. I'm like, I thought only Scrubs played this guy, because dwarves suck. Actually, they don't suck. Dwarves are pretty good. I got a couple dwarves in my deck. Just Barclay Elves and Cleaver. It's a good combo. Haha, it's David's turn to check out.
I've tried playing Gwent. I've played a few rounds of Gwent, and it has not grabbed me.
I think if it's out onto an actual tablet or phone,
I
when it comes out to that,
I am 100% certain that's coming.
Oh, yeah.
Because the new UI that they've shown has... It's very mobile friendly.
Yeah. No, they're making a killing off of it, just off of PC. And if they introduce that as an app, it's going to make even more.
They must be making super money or something, because for the Challenger 2, the tournament that just ended, they rented a castle.
Yeah, I heard about
that. A whole fucking castle.
Yeah.
And like, not a little one either. Like, they had aerial shots of this thing, and it's like, holy shit. Like, they had to spend $1 million on this goddamn tournament just renting that castle.
No,
and it was 100 grand as the prize.
To be fair, castles aren't that expensive to rent, because this is one of the things that was surprising to me, because in September I went to Germany for a software engineering conference, and I also took my wife there for our anniversary, because our anniversary fell over that. And if I went to Germany on our anniversary without bringing my wife and I came back, I would be stabbed very shortly after stepping foot in Madison.
Sure.
So one of the things we did is we rented a hotel room in a castle overlooking the Rhine.
Sure.
And it wasn't terribly expensive, because as it turns out, there are castles all over the place in Europe.
Sure. You rented
can I ask
a
how much?
Room.
Huh?
Can I ask how much? You don't have to expose detail.
It was
curious. There a comma? Was there a comma? That's
no.
Enough of the question. Okay.
No, it was less than $200 for the night. It was
wow.
Right.
Yeah. That's
honestly cheaper than Adepticon.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was for
I don't remember if it
a room, not for literally the entire castle.
Yeah, but multiply that by 30 or 40, and you still have something that's well within that's well within promotional costs.
Sure.
Or something. That was the thing. I don't remember if it was like 120 or 150 euros, but it was a lot less than I was expecting.
Hmm.
And part of the reason it's so cheap is because there are castles all over the place, and all of them are converted into hotels. Well, most of them are converted into hotels, because if you've got a castle, what else are you going to do with it?
Exactly.
They had a bunch of cosplayers walking around dressed like people from The Witcher. Yeah. Like it was very immersive. Yeah. And then the players would come out and they're just wearing like t-shirts. It's like, come on, guys. Like,
was it one of the cosplayers, the newborn?
Yeah, actually, yeah. It was just shrieking behind one of the players constantly.
You just have somebody walking around behind it with a grate,
yeah,
just running away from it.
Also, incidentally, when we got off the train,
great cosplay. You just get like the side of the spaceship and just have your head poking through it. And then you put on a different mask and it works as a Jason X cosplay as well.
Oh my god! Oh god! Jason X. So I am still upset that Jason X is not in Friday the 13th, the video game.
Yeah, well, you know.
They need to put him in. They need to just
make...
They
have Jason, at least.
Yeah. I would like it better if he was just a pixelated version of him. That, like, whenever... Like, you would turn, and he would look like he's always facing you.
Right, right.
So it's like it's Doom, 2D, yeah. like in Doom. That's what I want that Jason to look like. That would be amazing. I would be... I'd be excited to play the game if that was the case.
At least he's the dumb purple color scheme.
That's
he plays the chiptune music.
He does play that too. But no, I want a board that's like on a spaceship with the counselors and that. I want or the whole thing be an all VR.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And also, I will say that when we got to the Castle Hotel, because we took the train to it, because one of the things I'm horribly jealous about Germany is that they have an amazing train system.
Did you go to Würzburg?
No.
If you go to Germany again, go to Würzburg. It's one of my favorite cities on the planet.
Okay.
And see the Bishop's Manor in Würzburg. It's beautiful.
So we got off the train, and the train system is amazing in Germany because you can get from anywhere to anywhere else fairly cheaply. And so we got off the train, we walked to the castle, and then we walked into up the entrance to the castle. And the entrance to the castle was like several layers of ramps going, like you would go up to the side and then turn and then go back. And it was really steep and hard to climb. And my wife made the comment, it's like, wow, this is really difficult. And I was like, yeah, look up there at the arrow slits. There's a reason that this is difficult to get there.
Yeah.
Because it's a fortified position. And if we were trying to invade here, they would have already killed us.
They're called murder holes for a reason.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why their transit system over in other countries, like basically over in Europe, are so much better than ours, because of the population density. I mean, Germany is about the size of Wisconsin, in a sense, if I remember correctly.
It's about twice the size of Wisconsin.
But still,
scale of Wisconsin, like, correct. Not on
you
the
compare
United States.
Europe to America, and you're like, oh, I understand why everybody's trilingual here.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. In the States, right?
Like,
we speak Canadian, American, and then...
Lady, I speak two languages, English and bad English. but yeah, like if Illinois and Minnesota spoke a different language than Wisconsin, Wisconsinites would speak all three of those languages as a matter of necessity. We're not just dumb and lazy, and they're not just smart. A German needs to know English and French. Or an Italian. You know, you need to pick some of those border languages and have a functional knowledge. It's the reason why Texans have at least a functional Spanglish repertoire.
Well, I mean, anymore in Europe, it's just everyone speaks their native language in English because everybody else speaks their native language in English.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I had Danish friends that said that even though Danish and Swedish are mutually intelligible, that Danes and Swedes typically communicate in English because it's just easier.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also more of the education system, too. They are required to learn other languages as compared to here, where it's just like, I can say library.
Juan es muy guapo.
Also, that was the other weird thing about going to Germany is
I said Juan es muy guapo.
I don't know.
It's Juan is very handsome.
Oh, okay.
It's my go-to example. And fine. ¿Dónde está el biblioteca?
Hotodogo niño de
¿Cuánto es uno biblioteca?
I spoke some Japanese. Hotodogo niño de esquinas ne.
Gojira respirar fuego atomico.
But also,
I don't know what you said.
Otianjobi isudeska.
I don't know what you said.
mine was, I like hot dogs, and when is your birthday?
Are those related questions? Are you coming on to me?
But that's honestly almost all I remember from Japanese. Hototogo is...
Hototogo. That sounds like a racist impression of a Japanese person saying
"no."
Hot
that's
dog.
That's
you just say English words with an O at the end of each syllable.
Kind of hambaga.
Hambaga
is.
Yeah.
I mean that's
all chimontoya hambaga.
That's how they.
Wouldn't it be hamburger? Because you can't have in Japanese. You can't have a syllable that ends with M.
Hamaga. It's
I mean, it's not a Japanese word, so they make do.
Oh yeah, but
Japanese,
I mean, when they spell
native
it in
words, every syllable ends with an N or a vowel. Yes. Yeah.
It was funny though when I was in Germany because I speak a tiny amount of German and I was hoping to be able to practice my German, and this got me absolutely nowhere because I would start speaking and everybody would say I speak English. It was just like no.
Yeah, just talk English.
It's kind of like the head pat. It's like, oh, it's good you tried, but let's just speak English. Although it was weird. People kept asking me if I was from London, and it's because I mean I know I have my southern accent, and I'm used to like being picked out as having the hick accent in the group, and it's like going over to Germany. It's like, oh, did you come over from London?
So Marshall, who you guys know from the War Machine crew. He works with me. And yesterday a customer complimented me on that nice Australian boy.
We should have Marshall on the podcast.
I was like, yeah. Like, Australian? Did he have a... you know what? I think I know who you're talking about. Because nobody else sounds vaguely Australian.
No.
I told that to Marshall, and he's like, yeah, I actually get that a lot.
Okay.
But yeah, I was confused by... my accent was apparently confused with a British accent multiple times over there, and it was really confusing.
Well, to be honest with you, I like watching a lot of The Walking Dead, and there's a lot of British actors in there to do a Southern accent. So
it was to have assumed you were an actor.
Yeah. God, it's crazy the amount of British actors on The Walking Dead. If you ever watch any of the Talking Dead shows afterwards, it's like, what?
Oh, man, how about that latest kill-off on The Walking Dead?
It was fine. With Carl?
Spoilers.
Spoilers. It's already out.
Okay. I mean, he's the main character in the comics, like, from now on, so this is gigantic.
Yeah, it's pretty big. Well, also, Rick is supposed to be missing an arm, too.
Just a hand.
Just a hand, yeah.
And yeah.
I mean, the show's different. It's dropped off from this season. Leading up to this season, it wasn't that bad. This one felt like it was... I'm going to talk about Walking Dead for a moment. There was an annoying sequence where they all showed up at Negan's residence, basically, in all their cars, with all the aluminum siding that they had that would block bullets.
Sure it would.
Yes. But they all pulled up, and then Negan just walks out. And, like, you're there to do what now? You're there to kill him, more likely. And no, nobody shoots at him. He just out there and has a conversation with people. And then they start firing.
Just kill him.
Yeah. Like, you pulled up there to do one thing. You wanted to stop the Saviors. And so the leader of the Saviors walks out. And you're just like, nah, we'll save him for Rick.
To be fair, The Walking Dead is terrible.
Yeah, it's better than Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, it is.
But... Fear of the Walking Dead now has Daniel back, and I'm very happy because
neither of them are as good as Z Nation.
I still have Z Nation sitting on my queue for my DVR waiting for me to watch it.
It had zombie George R.R. Martin in it.
It does. Z Nation is... Z Nation has...
He's chained to a desk, and he's still signing copies of his books.
Okay.
Because that's the only thing a zombie mind can remember to do is autograph paperbacks.
He's... There are moments in Z Nation that are actually really well done. Like if they would have chopped this, if they would have basically chopped up all of Z Nation and made it into a movie, it would probably be a really good movie.
The central
didn't they already make that with Zombieland?
No. Z Nation is something. Than Zombieland. It's made by the folks that make Asylum.
The character oh my God, why am I blanking on his name? The gray skin guy.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
what's
I know
his name.
Murphy,
yeah, the Murphy. That central plot line is actually a really interesting fucking plot line for a zombie show.
Yeah, where he gets bitten and he doesn't turn.
He's the one person on the planet that's immune, and so everybody wants him. He's a walking MacGuffin.
Yep.
And then it gets more, you know, with his power to control the undead. Like, that's interesting. And the best description of Z Nation is that every episode, it's an ongoing role-playing game, and every episode is the GM just coming up with a shtick for that week.
Or it's a new GM.
No? Yeah. Like, all right, guys, this week you come across the town, and they got a competition to get a sniper rifle. Okay, this week you come across the town, and everybody, it's like a Western. This week you come across the town, and it's underwater. It's like, all right, that's the session this week. It doesn't make a damn lick of sense, but
no,
okay.
That's
fine.
The easiest and quickest way to describe that show.
It's fine because it doesn't piss me off as much as fucking Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Because I can just go, yeah, sure, whatever. And that's liberating.
Yeah.
It's liberating, David.
Yeah. I didn't see any zappity grumbles other than somebody had mentioned we should talk about Gwen some more.
Oh,
and then
so,
I'm not going to. Son of a bitch. Son of a bitch.
I'm excited. They accidentally spoiled with the zombie thing. Oh, no, he's unplugging me. Because they took a lot of the zombie unit abilities and put them onto insectoid abilities. Like they took the Ekamara ability and put it onto like the Rolly Pillbeg style. And but they accidentally spoiled what the Unseen Elder's new ability was going to be, which was to drain a unit by half. And they haven't defined drain. But my guess is that it's basically just going to be Regis's ability, the neutral card that's currently out. And they're just going to make that the zombie shtick.
You mean Regis Destroyer Worlds?
Right? Yes, yes, yes. No, Regis Philbin. He's out of control.
No,
you, I love Notre Dame.
Don't you remember I can't Regis?
That butter.
Don't you remember Regis?
He's no Regis Philbin from Regis and Kathy Lee.
You don't remember the Regis?
I remember the Regis. I'm just going with Regis and Kathy Lee.
No.
That Regis would win in a fight with the other Regis.
That would be very true. Do you know of the Regis?
No.
You should look up the Regis, and that's probably the best 2-season show ever made by Cartoon Network. Okay. Just Megas XLR.
Mm-hmm.
Give you a
if
quick
you say it quickly, it sounds like mega sex.
Yeah. So to give you a quick synopsis of the show, think of the two, Dante and Randall, from Clerks.
Yeah.
And what if they found a giant robot in a junkyard?
And battled Kaiju. So, okay.
That is Megas XLR.
If Mechagodzilla was piloted by Dante and Randall from Clerks.
Okay.
It's pretty much it. It's good. I'm still on the lookout for... That's the reason why I own an Xbox 360 downstairs, is because that is the only thing I've ever bought it on. It's still there on that system. I cannot find it anywhere else. And they won't remake it either. Fucking. Didn't work. All right, so we should go into recommendations. Anybody else got one?
I recommend playing War Machine. It's fun.
I might do that next year. Almost done with this year.
Okay, you've got, 10 days left? Or
yeah, no, I understand that is not a big shtick. What I might do, I might go home and I might spend my remaining press ganger points on all the minion stuff that I've missed. And who knows, maybe I'll play it next year sometime.
Have you gotten your shirt yet?
Yeah, have you got your t-shirt yet?
Not yet. Has anybody gotten those yet?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I don't know when those go out. But yeah, I mean, that'll be nice when I get that.
It would be funny if it was a Dracodile size t-shirt.
Oh my God, just wear the little Dracodile shirt. He would wear it constantly. I'd put it on the bunny. The kids have a bunny. He could wear the Dracodile shirt.
My wife, who is stunningly awesome, also does a lot of work with cloth, and I may be able to make you a t-shirt for your Dracodile.
Yes.
Speaking of some people, too, if you can always talk to your local game store about pre-ordering those models from Privateer as well.
They can do that.
I mean, you might make it worth their while in some way or another, because, I mean, they're doing you a favor in a sense.
Yeah.
But you can always contact your local store to see if they can order
these
it for
people
you.
People badmouth the what was it, Black Anchor Industries?
Black Anchor.
Yeah. People are angry about that, and they're like, oh, no, taking money away from the local stores, whatever. Like, everybody I've talked to at our local store is actually okay with it,
mm-hmm.
because the thing is, those huge base models are a big gamble.
They're
a big money investment,
mm-hmm.
and they just sit on the shelf gathering dust. Like, if you go in your store and they have, like, three of the same battle engine, that store wasted $500. And it's just sitting there doing nothing.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll sell one when it goes on clearance for $50. But they have to risk that every time a huge base model comes out. There's not the turnaround on those big ticket items. So they're okay with it.
Well,
don't be angry about it.
And this is also the thing that the BAH, the BA exclamation point. Ah. Because every time I look at BAHI capitalized, I always
heavy.
Read it.
That's the letter that was missing. I knew there was another letter in there.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Bahi, Black Anchor Heavy Industries.
And every time I look at
B-A-H-I
capitalized, to me, I read it as BAH exclamation point.
BAH!
Yeah, bah. Yeah. So the other thing is that is only resin models, and there, as far as I know, that the upcoming hard plastic huge bases are still going to be available through the normal channels.
Oh, yeah.
And As far as I know from what I know of the manufacturing process is that resin models have a much lower profit threshold because they're much more expensive per ounce to deal with, and so Bahi is probably a response to the fact that they, because of the manufacturing problems, the manufacturing woes they've had with the large resin models. My guess is that this is just saying, you know, we can't make these available to local stores at a price point that anyone is worth it to them. Yeah.
Well, I mean, because basically, like we're talking like Old Witch, and it just. Using her as an example, because she was actually only sold directly through privateer before she was fixed. But I mean, they would normally have to sell it to the distributor. The distributor then would have to sell it to the local store. Local store would get the model. Models would have effed up legs, so they would have to either rely on the customer to contact privateer to get them replaced. Or if the customer was extremely upset about it, they'd have to give it back to the store. Store would have to give it back to the distributor. Distributor would have to give it back to privateer.
Yeah.
And that's just too many hands for things to go through.
Yeah, there are too many hands. And my guess is that if they put them through the same channel, the markup on the resin models would be insane compared to the markup on the hard plastic models. And yeah. Somebody said, well, this isn't going to work, so we're going to have to forge world it.
I haven't actually seen many complaints recently about it. I only saw complaints really when the Dracodile was introduced.
Every time there's news that there is any sort of change, internet nerds will complain about it.
Yeah.
And so yes, there was sound and fury, and it's kind of died down now.
It signified nothing, you might say.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, like, the only things that they've actually said is that it's only going to be resin models. It's only going to be huge base models, which, again, is awesome for local stores because they don't have to stock that $70 model that they just bought from the distributor to end up selling it for $60 later on.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's all the classic models that they have, like you know, the Stormclad and all those. Stormwall. Stormwall. Yeah. All those will be sold normally as they have been before, including like Woldrath and all the current resin ones. Those all be available through your local game store. Yeah.
But I think this is just an issue that they have clearly had problems with the manufacturing process with resin models, and I think this is just a response to that. And my guess is that they just aren't going to have the volume with the resin stuff going forward to justify doing it in the current way.
Well, it's also a way for them to actually save money themselves too, because unlike when they were just basically producing Woldraths, you know, they just made. You know, like, okay, we have a number of Woldraths we're going to make, and then we're just going to ship them out.
Yeah.
And then they only sell, technically, only ever sell maybe half of them.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, 350, let's say they made 700. That's 350 ones that they didn't need to make.
Yep.
They didn't need to spend the resources to make. So if they have a direct course to the people buying them, they'll only make that amount. Or, you know, they'll make them to order, which will help their production costs, which might help other things get cheaper along the line too.
And as Nathan said, the big models are a risk for the retailers, and War Machine has a problem with SKU bloat, that there are just too many SKUs, and they keep trying to they have at various times in the past tried to reduce SKU bloat by getting rid of a lot of superfluous stuff and building kits that make multiple things.
Yeah.
So I think this is just a realization, a further realization of that policy, is trying to make the product line that shows up in stores equally appealing, but having less different products to manage.
Yeah. All right. Dumbo Zappity Grumbles. We were at recommendations.
Hey, do you like roguelikes? Sure you do, because they're amazing. Do you like 8-bit chiptune style music? Damn straight you do. You should play Crypt of the Necromancer. Necrodancer. Crypt of the Necrodancer.
That is a roguelite, though, isn't it?
It is a roguelite. It's not super hardcore. It's you do the run, you die, you buy upgrades, you do the run again. It's one of those simpler roguelites. You perma-die in so much as you start a new run after buying upgrades with the money you got. Like that Mega Man game. And 20XX. Like, yeah, like that 20XX, whatever like that. But it is... The soundtrack's amazing. It's a rhythm game. Everybody likes rhythm games because you need to do actions like on the beat. And by doing actions on the beat, they're more successful.
I am out.
The enemies all have their own rhythm. You can't... The PS4 version, at the very least, comes with a character class called the Bard. And the Bard...
Jesus Christ.
Wow.
The
Bard's passive ability is that you get to ignore the core rule of the game. So the Bard, you don't have to follow the rhythm, but every time you do an action, all the other enemies also do an action. So it's more like Azure Dreams or Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon or any of those roguelites where it's turn-based, you know. So if you like that style more, you can do the Bard and just enjoy the music. But the shtick of the game is the rhythm game meets roguelite meets 8-bit chiptune music. It's always dirt fucking cheap on Steam sales. It's usually dirt cheap on the consoles with various sales. It is a lot of fun, and the soundtrack is amazing.
Also, I am a big enough fan of roguelikes that when I was teaching a computer science course, my first assignment for the year was making all of my students play NetHack.
Yeah. Hmm.
And actually, I have one of my former students does play War Machine, although I haven't heard from him for a while. But Gray, if you're listening, if you happen to be listening to this podcast, hey.
So my quick recommendation is a show that ended, I think the whole series ended in around October or so. But it's a show that I'm not really drawn to that much. It's a show called Halt and Catch Fire.
Sure.
Which is a drama.
Yep.
Which is weird for Andy to watch because generally Andy, whenever I watch a drama, it's usually something associated with like a sci-fi drama or something like that, like The Expanse, I would consider a sci-fi drama. But Halt and Catch Fire is basically kind of a trip through nostalgia as well because it does take place pretty much at the beginning of the computer, when computers started becoming revolutionary in a sense. It follows the same five characters through many years of their life, going through four different seasons. It is a really good show. Kind of like something like one of the main characters kind of modeled a little bit after Steve Jobs. One is a little Wozniak with computer programmers. It is probably one of the best shows I've seen in a long time. I just really like it a lot.
And if it's over, that means that you can kind of just, you know, marathon it.
Full binge complete it. Series.
If it is over and being recommended, then it will not kill your soul as it declines into terribleness in the future.
Yeah.
Which is an advantage.
I did cry at the end of it, though. So it was sad.
And you're usually so emotionally stoic during fictional things.
Oh, yes. I'm so emotionally stoic.
Yeah.
God, I cry at the littlest things. All the goddamn... Not even the littlest things. It's very... Everything.
Seriously, you of all people must have joined me in weeping at the end of Logan, right?
Oh, I cried at Logan.
Good, good.
I cry at everything. Well, we should have an episode where we talk about all the movies that Andy, the dirty looking biker dude, cries
he
at.
He thinks he's Superman. Oh, that's right. You haven't seen Iron Giant because you know it'll emotionally destroy you. Was that the one?
I've seen Iron Giant.
Oh, okay. There was one that you said you hadn't seen because you had heard that it was depressing and you were worried about it. I don't remember what movie that was, though.
Big Fish.
Oh, yes. It was Big Fish.
Yeah. You guys already talked. Yeah.
Big Fish would obliterate you.
Yeah, it probably would. Everyone cries at the first 2 minutes or first 10 minutes of Up. So,
yeah.
And at the last 10 minutes of Up, too, because that's really sad, too, at the very end.
How do you feel about the concept of your father dying and having to say goodbye to him?
No, fuck no.
Yeah, you should have been watching.
How was the last of Up sad? I thought the last...
No, the first 2 minutes. He said, no, the first 10 minutes.
The last 10 minutes of Up is sad, too, because that's basically where...
Absentee father.
Because they park the house at, you know, where...
Where he wanted the house to be.
Correct, yeah. Correct.
But, well, I mean, that was what I thought was the genius part of the... That was what I thought was the genius part of the film,
mm-hmm.
is that, I mean, I realized this driving home from the movie, that he put the house exactly where he wanted it to be, but he was never aware of that, so he was able to let go of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the house, from his perspective, the house just disappears, and he is never aware of this.
Yeah.
That he got everything he wanted, but he was only okay with it after he let go of everything. Up is one of my favorite movies that has ever been made.
Kind of tearing up thinking about the film right now.
Those old men have really good upper body strength, by the way.
Yeah. And yes, the first 10 minutes. Yes, the first 10 minutes of Up are. I cried as well during that.
God.
That was just the most one of the most emotionally powerful sequences in film.
Honestly, it's if any time you have a character where their child dies.
Yeah.
It bothers. I'm not a father. I'm not. You know. I don't have any kids.
Mm-hmm.
But that bothers me to more than anything is when you know you have somebody who has to bury their own child or something like that. It just, it's fucking sad.
My terrible thought was that Pixar managed to sidestep the cliche of killing off the mother in these movies by having her kid die first. That way she's technically not a mother and they don't do the cliche Disney thing.
Oh, yeah. Her parents dying. I just fucking hate that. Yeah.
Well, that said, even though we're all talking about crying during Up, if you haven't seen Up, watch it. It is honestly, it is easily in my list of top 10 films.
It's a good movie.
It is an amazing movie.
They should have like basically, like when you have to sign up for what is it for the draft?
The draft.
Not the draft, but it's
the draft.
Selective Service.
Selective Service. When you have to sign up for Selective Service, they should also send you a DVD copy or Blu-ray copy of Up, and you have to watch this in front of a webcam to see your reaction to it.
And if you don't cry, you're on the Group W bench.
You are on the
Group W bench.
Yeah, you can't get any firearms. You are selectively taken out of service.
I hope everybody listened to the Alice's Restaurant Massacre for Thanksgiving. If that's not a tradition of yours, you're a failure as a human being.
The what?
Alice's Restaurant. The Alice's Restaurant Massacre. Both parts.
With Alice? Alice's and like...
Alice's Restaurant Mel is not the name cook? Of Alice's Restaurant, but it is the name of the song. And that's why we call this song Alice's Restaurant.
But is it the show Alice?
No.
No.
Oh.
It's about Arlo Guthrie's friend Alice, who had a restaurant, but Alice's restaurant wasn't called Alice's restaurant.
So there's no Mel in it.
No.
He's not a cook.
But she lived in a church, and having all that open area where the pews used to be, they decided they didn't have to take the garbage out for an extra special long time. And so you will listen to this. After this, we're going to go down. I'm going to pull up the Alice's Restaurant Massacre on your YouTube. We're going to listen to it. We're going to laugh. You're going to be enriched. And then we're going to watch whatever you were going to show to David. I forget what it was.
I'm trying to figure out if I have to play games with Chris, though. So,
Chris. Fuck him. I love you, Chris.
Is this the Fuck Chris episode of Crippled System?
That's next week if he shows up.
Oh, okay.
And I'll talk about Gwent while I'm doing it.
No. All right.
That's a good point. It's a well-made Rumble. Point.
Yes.
We should probably call it quits, though.
That's fine. My book.
Sorry, that you just joined
the
chat.
You're the one
here
with the controls.
Well, I suppose I can.
David and I just sit here like idiots while you're like, yeah, we should probably end. You're like, okay, like we can do anything about it.
Well, you could say, oh, hey, we should end this now.
Yeah,
you guys can take control. Sometimes I'm not a control freak, unless you grab my mouse or something like that.
Yeah,
and that's not a euphemism.
Oh, I was about to ask.
It's small and hairy.
I don't know how to pronounce the name of the new person in chat, but they say they love Chris. So there you go.
Awesome. Are you going to call quits? Thanks, guys, for watching. Thanks, guys, for listening. And we'll see you.
Congratulations, Georgie Babe, on winning Grunt Challenger 2.
Oh, we might. Have an episode record during the week and then we'll just air it on next Sunday because I don't think anybody wants to be here during Christmas Eve.
Yeah, or we can delay it to like Tuesday or something, but those are the couple of options. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we're going to try not to skip episodes in the new year. That's my goal. My goal is to not always like just have skipping episodes. Try to go through a full year where we have 52 episodes.
Fair enough.
That's a lot of numbers. I don't like that.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. Right.
Thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye. As it turns out, I'm a mathematician, which means I hate numbers.
Wait, what? You just told me that you like numbers. No. You told me you like numbers on Wednesday.
Well, I like calculating numbers. I hate dealing with individual numbers.
No. So you like numbers in mass, but not...
Yeah, when I'm doing the work with when I'm doing the work with calculation, I'm writing programs that actually deal with the numbers for me and tell me what the result is.
Okay.
Because I hate, that's what mathematicians do these days is people who hate numbers enough that they train robotic slaves to deal with numbers for them and tell them what the results are.
Sure.